Going one to hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and Jill Robbins. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
China has reported the world's first known human infection with a rare form of bird flu. A 41-year-old man from Jiangsu in eastern China was confirmed to have H1N3, Chinese health officials reported Tuesday. No human case of this version or strain has been reported anywhere else in the world. Bird flu is found in different species of wild birds. The infected man was treated in the hospital for about a month and was expected to be released soon, the National Health Commission said in a statement. The statement described the infection as an accidental cross-species transmission. It added that the risk of large-scale transmission is low. The Health Commission did not provide details on how the man was infected. Many different strains of bird flu are present in China, and some end up infecting people, usually those working with poultry. Officials said the man's contacts had been investigated and no other human cases of H1N3 were found. The news comes as the world continues to deal with COVID-19, which scientists say likely jumped from animals to humans. COVID-19 is a form of coronavirus. But unlike with coronaviruses, there are worldwide surveillance systems in place to watch for human cases of bird flu. The systems were established after a strain called H5N1 appeared in the late 1990s in poultry markets in Hong Kong. Between 2013 and 2017, another bird flu virus named H7N9 infected more than 1,500 people in China. That strain killed nearly 300 people. Those infected had close contact with infected chickens. The World Health Organization said in a statement to Reuters, it remains unknown how the patient got infected with H1N3. No other cases were found in emergency surveillance among the local population. At this time, there is no indication of human-to-human transmission, the statement said. The WHO added that as long as bird flu viruses are spread in poultry, human infections will be possible. The new case in China, however, should serve as a warning that the threat of a flu pandemic is persistent, the WHO said. Philip Claes oversees the Food and Agriculture Organization's Emergency Center for Transboundary Animal Diseases for Asia and the Pacific. He told Reuters the H1N3 strain is not a very common virus. only about 160 cases were reported in the 40 years to 2018, Clace said. He added that most of the cases were found in wild birds or waterfowl in Asia and some limited parts of North America. None had been discovered in chickens so far, Clace said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Israel's health ministry said Wednesday there is a possible link between the second shot of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine and mild heart problems among young men. The ministry said about 275 men aged 16 to 30 who received the vaccine reported a heart problem known as myocarditis over the last 6 months. It said the link was found to be stronger among the younger age group, 16 to 19. The cases of mild inflammation of the heart represent a very small percentage of more than 5 million vaccinated people. However, the ministry said it will extend the research to investigate the possible link between these cases and the vaccine. Drug maker Pfizer said in a statement that it meets regularly with the Israeli Ministry of Health to review the data, and no causal link to the vaccine had been established. Last month, the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, in the United States recommended more research on a possible link between mRNA vaccines and myocarditis. Both the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna vaccines are made with the technology. The CDC said one set of data showed a higher-than-expected number of observed myocarditis among 16 to 24-year-olds. But the agency said another data set showed the number among vaccinated people is no greater than what would be expected in the general population. Last week, the European Medicines Agency, EMA, added that heart inflammation or myocarditis after receiving the Pfizer vaccine had been no cause for concern. The health agency said it found such cases were similar to those in the general population. Dr. Paul Offit is director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He said parents should still vaccinate their children because of the known risks of COVID-19. Offit said, I think that in the world of trying to weigh relative risks, the disease is a greater risk. I'm Dan Friedel.
Researchers are worried about the fishing equipment they call ghost nets floating around the Pacific Ocean. The nets threaten sea animals and pollute coastal areas. Often lost many years ago, the fishing gear continues to kill ocean life and damage coral reefs in Hawaii. A ghost net study is being led by a biologist, Jennifer Lynch, from Hawaii Pacific University. She said it will be difficult in many cases to identify the source of the ghost equipment. If they fail to find a source, she said, that's going to be increased evidence for policymakers to see the importance of gear marking, Lynch said. Lynch said she is not interested in blaming anyone. Instead, she hopes the study will find new ways to prevent damage to the environment. Drew McWhirter is a graduate student at Hawaii Pacific University and one of the study's lead researchers. His biggest concern is that the equipment keeps killing fish and other wildlife long after it is lost. Some of the animals that are being killed are endangered, like Hawaiian monk seals, seabirds, and turtles. The nets leave a path of destruction, pulling coral heads out, and can cause a lot of ecological damage, McWhirter said. The ghost nets pollute oceans around the world. But the Hawaiian Islands are in the middle of two very large areas of ocean pollution. To the island's east lies the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, a 1.6 million square kilometer floating mass of waste. To the west, there is another large area of floating waste in the ocean. It is difficult to know where the ghost nets came from. They are believed to have come from many different countries. Few have any identifying marks or features. Experts believe many nets are lost accidentally. But some illegal fishing boats leave nets in the water to avoid being caught. Other fishermen cut away pieces of damaged nets instead of recovering them. The research team gets ghost nets from three places: the main Hawaiian Islands, Hawaii's longline fishery, and the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. The northwestern Hawaiian Islands are part of the Papahānaumokuʻākea National Marine Monument. It is the largest protected environment in the United States. It also is recognized as a United Nations World Heritage Site. A cleanup effort there in April gathered nearly 45 metric tons of nets and other lost gear. Researchers look at about 70 different features of each piece of net, including the kinds of material used. Raquel Korniuk is a researcher at the university. She said the team looks at things like whether the net is twisted or braided and how many pieces of rope the net has. The information is entered into a database, which will help scientists identify manufacturers and possibly individual fisheries or nations. The researchers have found nets from all parts of the Pacific, including Asian countries and the U.S. West Coast. Many ghost nets come from less developed nations. Those countries have few fishing rules and sometimes buy or manufacture low-quality nets. Brian Fujimoto is a fisherman who now works for a net manufacturer in the state of Washington. He said nets from poor countries are usually weaker. Fujimoto said his company uses technology, colors, and markings to identify their products. But making that a rule for the industry is only going to happen with the more industrialized nations. I'm Jill Robbins.
China plans to send 3 astronauts to its new space station later this month. The plans were confirmed to state television by Yang Li Wei, a chief designer for China's manned space program. Yang was the country's first astronaut to launch into orbit in 2003. 3 astronauts are to complete a 3-month mission on the new space station, called Tianhe. It is the 3rd and largest space station China has built. Its main module was launched into orbit April 29th. Last Sunday, a self-piloted spacecraft arrived at the space station carrying supplies. Chinese officials said the Tianzhou 2 spacecraft reached the station 8 hours after launching from Hainan, an island in the South China Sea. The spacecraft was carrying spacesuits, living supplies, equipment, and fuel. The astronauts will be carried to space aboard the country's Shenzhou 12 spacecraft. It will launch from China's Jiuquan base in the northwest. Yang did not provide the identities of the astronauts or give a flight date in his comments to China Central Television. But he said the astronauts were expected to practice spacewalks, complete repairs, and carry out some scientific operations. When asked whether any women were in the crew, Yang said none would be joining the upcoming mission. "But missions after that, all will have them," he added. China does not take part in activities aboard the International Space Station, largely because of U.S. objections. U.S. officials are suspicious of the Chinese space program's secrecy and its connections to the country's military. The Chinese Space Agency plans a total of 11 launches through the end of next year. The missions will transport the remaining modules for the 70-ton space station and transport more supplies and crew. China has sent 11 astronauts, including 2 women, into space, beginning with Yang's flight in October 2003. The first female astronaut was Liu Yang in 2012. All of China's astronauts to date have been pilots from the ruling Communist Party's military branch, the People's Liberation Army. Yang said the astronauts will practice making spacewalks with 2 people outside the station at one time. China's first spacewalk was made in 2008 by astronaut Zhai Jigong outside the Shenzhou 7 spacecraft. The space station mission marks the latest step forward for China's space program. Last month, China made history by successfully landing a spacecraft on Mars. The Tianwen-1 spacecraft carried a robotic explorer called Zhurong. The explorer, or rover, is expected to measure atmospheric conditions and magnetic forces during its search for signs of ancient life on the Red Planet. I'm Brian Lin.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. James Madison was elected in 1808. He was a capable president who served 2 terms. But most Americans do not remember Madison for his presidency. They remember him for work he did earlier. After the Revolutionary War, in which the American colonists separated from Britain, Madison proposed that the new United States form a stronger national government, Madison's vision for a three-part government with an executive, a legislature, and an independent Supreme Court became the basis for the Constitution we still use today. Madison went on to persuade voters to accept the proposed Constitution. He explained how a system of checks and balances would prevent any one part of government from becoming too powerful. And when voters demanded more protection for individual liberties, Madison wrote the amendments that became the Bill of Rights. These actions earned Madison the name Father of the Constitution. Madison did not have the appearance of most politicians. He was a short man with a soft voice who had been sick often as a child. He grew up in a wealthy family in Virginia. He liked to read books and to study. He went to college at the school that later became Princeton University in New Jersey. When the Revolutionary War started, Madison's intelligence and knowledge, as well as family money, helped him participate in debates about independence. Madison also held positions in the new American government he helped create, including as Secretary of State under President Thomas Jefferson. Madison did not have much of a personal life. Many people were surprised when he married a young widow named Dolly Payne Todd. She was 26. He was 43. The couple did not have children, but they raised Mrs. Madison's surviving son together. Stories suggest the two were very happy, although they had different personalities. Dolly Madison was energetic, warm, and social. She loved to throw parties, and her guests loved to attend them. Historian Catherine Algor notes, Dolly Madison often dressed dramatically, including wearing turbans covered with peacock feathers. Her weekly gatherings at the president's house were so crowded that they became known as squeezes. As First Lady, Dolly Madison did not follow her husband's idea of a strict separation of powers. She invited officials from all parts of the government to her parties, as well as people from opposing political groups. Algor says, Dolly Madison succeeded in making the president's house a symbol of unity and glamour. She remains one of the best known and most loved first ladies in U.S. history. But his wife's popularity could not prevent Madison from facing a difficult presidency. During his first term, the U.S. faced increasingly tense relations with Britain. Madison accused the British of interfering with international trade and seizing American sailors. At the same time, European American settlers blamed the British for helping native tribes fight against them. But the settlers had violated treaties between the U.S. government and the Native Americans. In 1811, Native warriors attacked U.S. soldiers at the Battle of Tippecanoe in today's state of Indiana. A U.S. general named William Henry Harrison led his troops to fight back. The result was not clear, but Harrison declared victory. The following year, Madison proposed war against Britain. Congress approved. The War of 1812 began. For most of the war, American forces failed. But in 1813, they had two notable victories in Canada. They captured and burned the city of York in Toronto. And General Harrison had another major fight with Native warriors at the Battle of the Thames. The Native Americans were defeated. The leader of the tribal alliance, Tecumseh, died from the wounds he received there. That loss ended, for the most part, the efforts of Eastern Native American tribes to push back white settlers. In 1814, the war turned again. British soldiers took the U.S. capital of Washington, D.C. Madison had already left the president's house to meet with generals in the field. Dolly Madison remained. But when she learned the British were approaching quickly, she acted. She famously ordered her servants, as well as a 15-year-old house slave named Paul Jennings, to take down a painting of George Washington. The servants, slaves, first lady, and painting all escaped to safety. Commanders of the British force took a group of men to the Capitol building and set it on fire. Then they went to the president's house. They found the table set for dinner. The British commander stopped to toast the president before they burned his home. By the time Washington, D.C. burned, American and British officials were already in peace talks. But in the U.S., one more major battle was being fought. A militia general named Andrew Jackson led a ragtag army against a British attack in New Orleans, Louisiana. The Americans' rain of bullets and shells was so deadly that only one British soldier reached the top of the American defenses. When the British finally withdrew, they left behind more than 2,000 dead and wounded. 500 other British soldiers had been captured. 13 Americans were killed. The Battle of New Orleans was considered a great victory for the U.S. However, it was not necessary. The war had ended by treaty 2 weeks earlier. The War of 1812 almost bankrupted the U.S. government and cost the lives of tens of thousands of soldiers. It was devastating for many Native Americans. It did provide a chance for several thousand slaves to escape to freedom by serving in the British military. But it did nothing to improve the lives of most of 1 million enslaved people in the U.S. at the time. Despite all this, the war united most of the country. Albert Gallatin, Madison's Treasury Secretary, said people felt more American after the war. They acted more like a nation, he said. The song that would become the country's national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, was written during the War of 1812. Madison benefited from most people's belief that the war was a success. The end of his second term began what historians call the era of good feelings. Madison left the presidency more popular than when he had started it. After he retired, Madison lived on his Virginia estate for nearly another 20 years. He died in his bed at age 85. A niece was in the room. She says that a strange look passed her uncle's face. She asked him what was wrong. Madison's last words were, "Nothing more than a change of mind, my dear. I always talk better lying down." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.